This is Carla Dedesi with Your Family Matters here at 1180 WFYL, working for your liberty. Here every Friday morning, thank you for tuning in, and thank you for streaming in around the world. I am so privileged this morning to have two wonderful women in the studio with me. Miss Rita Whitaker,
yes.
Who is the director at Wayne Hall right here in Germantown. You've been the director there for 16 years, which
yeah.
means that we've been friends for a really long time,
yes.
Rita.
Yes, it's wonderful.
I know. And we also have in the studio with us, we're very privileged to have Miss Wendy Stanton with us.
Thank you.
And these are two women who are warriors at the front lines for women.
Yes.
They love women, they love children, they love families, mm-hmm. and they are huge pro-life advocates. So I just want to thank both of you for everything that you are doing on a daily basis.
Thank
so,
you.
Rita, we're going to start with your powerful story first.
Okay.
I would like you to just share a little bit about your story, because it's funny, when we were talking the other day, you said that when you share your story with some of the girls at Wayne Hall, and let me just share a little bit about Wayne Hall. This is a home that we house 9 women with their children.
Yes.
And we really try and get them involved with Bible studies and bring the gospel of Jesus Christ to them, because we know that that's what's really going to change their hearts and their lives.
Absolutely.
And you also, of course, encourage them to get GEDs and jobs and save money. And
yes.
you can talk more about that. But it was funny because you said that some of the girls, when they find out about your past, it really shocks them.
Yes.
Which is wonderful, because I always say God gives us our past so that we can use it with our present and our future.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us a little bit about how you came to have an abortion, or two, or three.
Yeah. Well, I was 15 years old, and it was the first time that I had sex, and I got pregnant. And my mom, she didn't want me to bring a baby home, because my father, you know, he was an alcoholic, and it just would have caused too much tension in the family. So that basically, at the time when I was 15, that was what she told me I had to do. I didn't realize that I had another option. I never thought about, like, the girls that come to Wayne Hall or girls that go to Wendy's place. I never thought about, like, wow, I can actually leave home and go somewhere else and have this baby. All I knew was my mom said I couldn't bring a baby home. I wanted to stay home, so I had to have the abortion. So that was the first abortion, and I was 15. The second abortion, I was 17, and I was dating this guy, and I was actually taking birth control pills, but I wasn't taking them the way you're supposed to take them, like sometimes I would miss or whatever, and I thought I kind of caught up on the pills, but evidently I didn't, and had sex and got pregnant again. And again, my mother said, well, you cannot bring a baby in this house. Your father's going to have a fit, you know, blah, blah, blah. And the guy and I were talking about keeping the baby at the time. And I just didn't have the courage to go through with it, because I wanted to stay home with my mom and my dad. So that was how I had the second abortion. The third time I was pregnant, I didn't have an abortion, but I, to be blunt, basically killed my own baby. I forced myself to have a miscarriage because I was raped, and that happened within a year of my second pregnancy. When I was in high school, I was raped by the first guy that got me pregnant, one of his best friends, who was a friend of our family. So I was raped by him. I did press charges and all that stuff. I had to drop it because there were some legal issues with his family being involved with some things. But anyway, so that was the third time I got pregnant, and I did not want to have another abortion. But I definitely didn't want to have this baby because it was the result of this rape and all this. So I forced myself to have a miscarriage.
Mm-hmm.
So I had 3 pregnancies by the time I was 17, going on 18 years old. And, yeah, so that's pretty much how everything happened.
So you already shared a little bit that you felt like you were not given enough adequate information about what are my options if I do want to have a child.
Yeah, no, there were no options given at all.
Right. So hopefully, you know, I'd like to say that you're 21 and this all happened only 5 years ago. But in reality, how many years ago was it?
Well, I was 17, the third pregnancy, 17 going on 18, and I'm 44 now.
Yeah, you can say that.
So
right. So it is my prayer and my hope that in, you know, 22 years, I believe that the pro-life movement, we are making a dent with little girls like you.
Yeah.
Once upon a time, you're 15, you're 16, mm-hmm. you're 17. Mom says no, boyfriend says no, and you don't know what else to do. But now we have crisis pregnancy centers, and we have homes like Wayne Hall and Wendy's Homes, and we want to couple and come alongside you. Let's go back to your experience. When you had this abortion, mm-hmm. what was it like for you physically? What was it like for you emotionally? And do you still think about them today? You know, I know that when we come to Jesus Christ, he covers mm-hmm. all of our mistakes. And actually, I think that he uses them greatly. But there's still consequences to things that mm-hmm. we do. Can you share a little bit about, you know, if there's a girl out there that wants to have an abortion, you know, can you give her the reality? Like, what was it like for you?
Okay, honestly, for me, when mm-hmm. I was a kid, when I was 15 years old, I didn't value life. So I knew I was pregnant, and I knew I was pregnant with a baby. No one had to necessarily tell me that. I knew it was a baby that I was aborting, but I just didn't value life. The guys that I were with, they wanted the babies, and probably more than I did, honestly. Physically, both times I had abortions, I was put to sleep. I told you that. So the second time I was a lot farther along than the first time. So I don't remember exactly how far along I was, but I know it was way more expensive than the first time. So I mm-hmm. knew that I was definitely farther along. Physically, I mean, like I said, I was put to sleep. I woke up and it was done.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember being in the hospital
mm-hmm.
and I was like really nervous. I'm very afraid of needles.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so crazy. Like, I was more concerned about getting the needle than actually having this abortion. And so I was in the hospital, and I think this was the first time I got pregnant, and they were going to give me the anesthesia, and they were going to put me to sleep, and I was, like, freaking out. Like, I was so scared, you know, to get this needle, and the nurse said to me, if I can just be blunt, so the nurse said to me, it's just going to be a little prick, you know. I said, no, she said, well, don't worry about it. That's what got you in this mess in the first place.
Mm. She was very callous
about
that.
Yeah, she just, like, blew it off, and I was just, like, I was horrified.
Right.
And I went to sleep, and I woke up, and it was over.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the guy was by my bedside practically crying, and I was saying to him, like, just get over it. Like, this is what we had to do kind of thing.
Which is a good point, Rita, because I think that we always say it affects the woman, affects the woman, affects the woman, it affects the child. Obviously, it affects the child. We're snuffing out a life. But it absolutely affects the daddies.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. The daddies... Mm-hmm. are to be the protectors. You know, they want to control. They're excited to be a daddy. And I think that we've done a real disservice in the state of Pennsylvania and in our country that we are not giving them a choice. You know, that child is half theirs.
Yeah.
And we are not giving them a choice at all. Let's go back. Where did you get the money for this abortion? I mean, you're 15, 16, 17 years old, and you said it was expensive.
It was.
I think they're $500 a day or six. Maybe they're even more than that today in 2014,
right.
But that's a lot of money.
Yeah, well, I grew up in a household where my parents taught me to save money, and I had a bank account. So when I was little, when I was 15 years old, my mother made me, she said, you're going to take half of this money out of your bank account. You're going to be partly responsible for this because this guy didn't do it on his own. So she made me, took me to the bank, and she made me take half of the money out of my account to pay for the abortion. And then she told him, and you have to pay the other half, and there's no option. Mm-hmm. So he did. Now, the second guy, he refused to pay for anything at all. And so I had to pay for the whole thing
mm-hmm.
out of my bank account.
Mm-hmm. Can you fast forward to when you were 19 years old with the third abortion that you...
No, I was 17.
Oh, you were 17?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. All this happened within a two-year period.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That is so much on a woman's body. Mm-hmm. And emotionally, hormonally, you must have been a mess, even if you don't remember that.
Right.
Because, you know, I've been pregnant with three little girls, and I had two miscarriages. And I know with my two miscarriages, my hormones were, mm-hmm. you know, flailing, and mm-hmm. I wasn't a vulnerable state. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I really wanted my babies, so it was a different experience for me when I had the miscarriage. But I can remember afterwards, it took me months to, you know, not be tearful every day. And of course, everybody has different hormones. But can you share with us a little bit about the word that I want to use is the desperateness mm-hmm. of young girls when, you know, your third abortion, you did not walk into that hospital and have the abortion. But you shared a little bit that you actually took the life of your
right.
baby. So share a little bit what that looked like, because you're not the only one that did that. There's mm-hmm. many women out there that are still doing. There's women today that are birthing their children and then leaving them by a dumpster
right.
or leaving them in a toilet. So I think that a lot of us who are pro-life think, how can they do that? But
right.
these girls are in a vulnerable and in a desperate place.
Absolutely.
We cannot blame them.
Mm-hmm.
But we can come alongside them and say, we will care for you and your child.
Mm-hmm.
So bring us back to that point where maybe you didn't feel desperate, but your actions showed that you were desperate.
Oh,
you wanted to get
desperate.
Rid of that child.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, I was desperate. Like I said, I was raped. You know, it was my third pregnancy. I did not want to have another abortion. I also knew I did not want to have this baby either because of the situation, the circumstance. And then my father was just this whole big nightmare. And it was just the overwhelming circumstances that just kind of drove me to just do whatever it was I had to do.
Mm-hmm.
And again, with the guidance of my mom,
mm-hmm.
you know, she was kind of like, okay, take hot baths. She like, do all this stuff. And when I went to school, I got on the horse in the gymnasium, and I just bounced around, and I got on the rings. I pushed furniture. Like, mm-hmm. I did everything I could to try to get rid of this baby because I was just so desperate to just be rid of this child that
mm-hmm.
came from this violent act,
mm-hmm.
so to speak. Mm-hmm. So,
which now we know, we're trying to educate women and men and even in policy that two violent acts do not make a right.
Right.
When our women are raped, it does not condone that abortion. We
right.
would never say, you know, yes, that was a terrible thing that happened to you.
Right.
But now let's not do more violence
right.
to your body and
mm-hmm.
to that child. So now bring us up to how you are introduced to Jesus Christ and your life mm-hmm. begins changing. And now you are actually mentoring women.
Mm-hmm.
You are a mother to hundreds of women, probably. You've been
yeah.
a mother
yeah.
and a grandmother to hundreds yeah. of women in the last
yeah.
15 years.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so share that exciting story.
Yeah, well, I gave my life to the Lord when I was 21, and that was from seeds planted by my sister when I was like 12, 13 years old. And she told me, I went to church with her when I was younger, and I kept hearing the pastor talk about being born again. And I kept asking her, like, what does that mean? What is he talking about? And so she told me, she said, well, you know, it's about, you know, accepting Christ, you know, as your Lord and Savior, and you do it in your heart. And you just repent of your sin and you confess and you ask him to save you, and he will. And I remember at 12, 13 years old, roughly, like getting on my knees and saying that, you know, little prayer in my room. And I was alone, but it was just kind of more of like an emotional thing. And it was just something I just wanted to do in the moment. You know, I thought it was a cool thing to do, so to speak. But I didn't repent, and I didn't really commit my life to Christ. I just said the little prayer, and it was emotional, and I got up off my knees, and I kept doing what I was doing. But when I was 21, I was involved in an adulterous relationship with a man that was probably at least 30 years older than me, possibly 35, mm-hmm. do the math. I think I was 19 when him and I were together, and he was, he was close to about 60. Yeah. And
Rita, you're a crazy girl. Going
yeah,
on.
I was a bad girl.
That's
and,
okay.
Yeah, and
we all make mistakes.
Yeah, so him and I were together for about a year, and he was very involved in politics and things of that nature, so he had a little bit of power and had a little bit of money, and that was a great conquest for me. So him and I were together. It was a very humiliating situation because he was my boss at my former job, which is a very political job. And then it kind of hit the job that him and I were in this relationship together. And then the newspaper got a hold of it, and they came up to the job, and they wanted to talk to me. It was just a big mess. So I was just humiliated. And I went to a funeral of my girlfriend's husband. My girlfriend's husband passed away. They were older. And I was at the funeral, and it was an Episcopalian church. And I got on my knees, and everybody was taking communion. And I got on my knees to take communion, not even born again, but just doing this because everybody's doing it. And got on my knees to take communion. I remember on my knees, I just heard this voice loud and clear in my heart that just said, "I want you." Mm-hmm. And I'm on my knees, and I'm like, "Wait a minute." You know, like, I'm like, nobody physically said this to me. And then I heard it again. And then I knew, like, that is God talking to me, telling me that he wants me, you know. And I knew that it was about me having a relationship with him. Mm-hmm. And so that day I just really wrestled with it. I'm like, no, I'm not, you know, I'm not doing this. I'm not getting saved. I'm not going to give my life to the Lord. Like, I don't want to do that, you know. Mm-hmm. And so whole weekend long I wrestled with this thing. And then finally that Sunday morning, the funeral was on a Saturday. And then that Sunday morning I woke up and I just was like, it just kept nagging at me. Just the Holy Spirit was just like, just nagging at me and just calling me to himself. And so I woke up Sunday morning and I said, okay, that's it. You know, I'm going to give my life to you, Lord. I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it, and this time it's for real. Mm-hmm. And so I knew I didn't have to be, quote-unquote, in a church building because my sister told me that. I remembered all that, that it's about relationship. It's not about the building. But I just said, I want to make this official. I want to do it in a church. Mm-hmm. So I searched around for a church that would be open on Monday. And I found this church, St. John Roman Catholic Church, on 13th Street in Center City. And they had a 5:05 Mass, I think it was. And I rushed after work to get to this church. And after the Mass, I got on my knees by myself in that church. And I told the Lord that I was a sinner and I wanted to be saved. And I asked him to forgive me of my sins. And it just helped me to live a new life for him.
Mm. Amen.
And I was 21. And ever since that day, from that day to this, I have not looked back.
It's a beautiful story. And what I love so much about your conversion story is that something that every one of us needs to learn. And I hear you using terms like born again, which for some of us who fear that term or don't know what it means, really, that is a term that Christ birthed in the New Testament when someone mm-hmm. said to him, "What must I do to be saved?" And he said to him, "You must be born again." Mm-hmm. There's nothing hocus pocus about that term. Mm-hmm. It means that when we give our lives to Jesus Christ and live for him every day, it is not an easy path, but those things that were important to us before we were looking at Jesus Christ are not important to us anymore. It's the Bible verse in Matthew that says, we must lose our life mm-hmm. to gain mm-hmm. heaven.
Yes.
So that's what the term born again means. And this word saved, you know, I have friends say, "Well, what are you being saved from?" You know, they mock that term. There's nothing to mock there. The fact is that there is sin inside of every one of us. And if you don't believe that you have sin inside of us, then you have the sin of pride. Mm-hmm. And that's a sin. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we all need to place our hope in God and in Jesus Christ. And so these are real terms and these are real conversions. And I love that God spoke to you in an Episcopalian church. He spoke to you in a Catholic church. Mm-hmm. And that is also what I want our listeners to hear again, that when God calls you, it doesn't matter about your denomination. You listen to his voice and you get out a Bible and you start reading it, and then he will guide you to what church you need to worship in and fellowship in. So share with us what you've been doing at Wayne Hall.
Yeah, well, I work with women and children that are homeless, and they stay with us for 9 months to a year, and we are a pro-life ministry there. So women come to us that are pregnant, that are parenting. We teach them life skill classes. We give them Bible studies, finance classes, parenting classes. All of the classes that we have are taught straight from the Bible. We use the Bible as our textbook. They receive counseling with us. We help them to get their GED, help them find employment, and ultimately graduate and get permanent housing.
What a loving, loving ministry.
And they don't have to be Christian to come into the program. They just have to be open to learn about Christ. And as we plant the seed, we just trust God and the Holy Spirit to do the work, and we leave it there. And, I mean, I'm living proof of that. When I was 12, 13 years old, the seed was planted in me. And then when I was 21, it gave, it birthed fruit in my life, and it's still birthing fruit, you know. And I can honestly say that's why I love to share my testimony, because the word is true. Whoever's in Christ is a new creation. The old is gone and the new has come. And that is truly my testimony. When I think about my life and the things that I did, and it's like, wow, yes, I have been reborn. It's like I've been birthed again, you know, into this world, and I'm a new creation. I'm a new creature. So, and I love to share that with the girls.
And that's what God can do and wants to do for every one of us.
Yes.
Thank you for sharing. Wendy Stanton.
Yes.
It's your turn. You're in the hot seat now.
Okay.
I want to hear all about your ministry that you started in your home in the 70s with your husband, Patrick. And I know that at that time, abortion was the furthest thing from your mind. But now it encompasses your every breath.
Yes, we are. We're pretty much in the thick of it, in the on the front line at the abortion mills. Right now, my husband's been involved with the 40 days of prayer down at 12th and Locust, and that's been a blessing. We've had many women that have turned away from going into, you know, into having an abortion, so they're saving the life of their child through this. Many people there are helping and praying. And I believe now, and we're up to, I believe, 14 women who've actually turned around from having an abortion in this 40 days.
Wendy, 40 Days of Prayer is a ministry that is catching fire across the country and actually across the world. I didn't even know that we were doing it right here at 12th and Locust. That's very exciting to me. So let's educate. What day are we up to right now about?
We have on Sunday. Sunday's the last day.
Oh, it is. Darn. So okay. Well, we need for women to know that I'm sure it's going to come back to Philadelphia.
It will be again in the spring.
And we can probably go to 40daysofprayer.com and see when it's coming back, and we can get on board. And what we're doing with 40 Days of Prayer is we have people praying outside of the abortion clinic of choice for 24 hours for 40 days, and we are seeing miracles happening. You want to get excited about your Christianity? You want to get excited about the pro-life cause? You look up that website. Wendy, back to you now. Let's go back to the 70s.
Okay.
How did you start having women living in your house with you?
Well,
that's kind of a frightening experience. Tell us about that.
Well, I went to our parish Respect Life meeting one night, and there was a woman there who worked at Birthright. She was a volunteer and was talking about this young college girl who was being told she had to leave the apartment if she wouldn't have an abortion. That she, her roommate was like, you've got to either have an abortion or move out. And so from that, she came to this meeting and said, does anybody know anyone that could take this girl in? So I went home, and I knew my husband would say yes, because he's the oldest of 12 kids, and there mentality in their house was there's always room for more. So, of course, he said yes. And so we started taking women in through Birthright. And we saw the need for, and that was usually through their pregnancy. And then they would, you know, and that was usually what it was, and with Birthright. And we saw the need for the women that needed help beyond having their baby. They still needed support and help. It wasn't like, okay, now the baby's here, you know. And actually, there was one summer in July of 88 where we had four children. I was pregnant with I was pregnant with our fifth child, and my husband got a call from someone, and he was asked to go pick up this woman who was homeless with four kids and pregnant in Norristown. It's like 9 o'clock at night. I'm like, where are you going? And he told me, I'm like, he said, I'm not sure where I'm going to take her. And I just looked at him. I'm like, I just thought, that could be me. I have four kids, and I'm pregnant. And she's got four kids, and she's pregnant. Like, what, you know, you just never know by the grace of God. I said, well, bring her here. And we lived in a three-story twin, and our third floor, that's where we would put the girls. So, my kids thought it was, this was instant playmates in the morning. So for the month, that month was pretty crazy in my house, because all the kids were, oh, my gosh, I guess they were six and under, so it was pretty crazy. But the backyard grass turned to no grass. But anyway, we helped her to find a place and fix up this place. And so, you know, she was able to have her child and, you know, we helped her get a place together. But we saw that, you know, we were needed a place, and that's how Our Lady's House came to be.
Okay.
So.
And that was your first house, Our Lady's
yes.
house. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now let's back up. How many women did you have personally living in your house before Our Lady's House came into existence?
I couldn't even tell you.
That many. So it's pretty much a revolving door.
Yes, it was a revolving door. It was a revolving door.
What a great model you were for your children of being Christ's hands and feet and just opening your house to people who were in need.
Well, yeah, and you just never knew. Some of these women, I remember there was one, I'll give a story about Dawn. She was pregnant, and I remember sitting there, and every night, you know, we'd sit and read books to our kids, and she was 18, and she would sit there and listen while we're reading these children's books, and she said to me, you know what, nobody ever did that when I was growing up. Nobody ever read a book to me.
Mm-hmm.
And Dawn moved on, had her baby. She got married, had two more children. She has three girls. And I remember her writing to me and saying, you know, guess what? I do that now. Every night I sit and I read books. And I thought, so there was just something we just did.
It's the little things that make a big impact.
Yeah.
The little things that make a big impact.
You know.
So you do keep in touch with some of these women
yes.
that lived with you.
Yes, we do. Yeah, some we hear from, others we don't. You know,
okay.
Some want to, and that's okay. They want to move on and put that part of their life behind them, and they know it's there. But you know, everyone's different. And so,
Wendy, you're doing pretty radical things. What do you say to the person that says, oh, my goodness, I would never do that? You might be putting some of your other children in harm's way. These are total strangers that are coming. What if they steal from you?
Oh, we've had that happen. We've had that happen, you know. And, you know, I've, of course, confronted the ones, and it's happened. It's not pretty, but... you know, we open ourselves to, we're all vulnerable, and, you know, we're just trying to help these women to find a better way. Some of them they've no clue. Some of them have grown up in, I'll say families, but I'm using the term loosely, mm-hmm. where they have never been taught. I have said over and over again through working with so many of these women, I am so thankful to God for my parents. The upbringing I had, just a mom and dad that just loved me and cared for me, and I always had that, you know. They weren't any extraordinary, but they were wonderful, just good parents, and, mm-hmm. and loved me, and my husband, you know, he grew up, his family was quite different, you know. I mean, he's the oldest of 12 kids, and his dad was very involved and started really the pro-life movement, John Stanton, in the Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, you know, area, and you know, so my husband grew up in a Catholic family. I'm a convert to the Catholic faith, so you know, but still, I mean, I grew up in a loving household, and so did my husband. So we were very blessed, and I've always said that, and we're very blessed to have loving parents. And I know most of our moms that come through are coming from families that are broken, you know, that there maybe was no dad in the picture, or maybe mm-hmm. the mom was not in the picture, mm-hmm. or they were coming through foster care, or so many different situations.
So they already have a disadvantage. All of the research
yes.
shows us that.
Yes.
So I hear you saying that it is worth taking the risk.
Absolutely.
You may have, it may not be the ideal situation, but it's worth taking the risk. Even if you are able to just change the life of one
yes.
person, it's worth taking
yes.
the risk to step out in faith and obedience. I think it's also really interesting that you shared that John Stanton planted seeds in Pat Stanton's heart
yes,
for pro-life,
mm-hmm.
because here at Your Family Matters, we are all about what matters to the family. What are we planting? What is the legacy that we are leaving for our children and our grandchildren? So this is a perfect example for us. And then Pat Stanton influences you. And now, what can you share with us? What's happening with your five kids? Are they now pro-life advocates as well? So we're multi-generational here.
Well, actually, we now have nine. At the time
oh
when
gosh.
We didn't. At the time when we started Our Lady's House, we had five. We have nine. We had seven children, and then we adopted two children from Mexico through Living Bridges, which was an adoption ministry, Catholic ministry. And now we just had our 10th grandchild, and we just found out that number 11 grandchild is on the way. So we've been really blessed.
Congrats.
And many of our kids are involved in different ways in, you know, pro-life, helping, praying, mm-hmm. and, you know, so we're very
blessed.
And
that's true, too. Not everybody needs to house people. That was laid on your heart, but everybody can pray. Everybody can volunteer at their Crisis Pregnancy Center or at Wayne Hall in Germantown, or come and volunteer at Our Lady's Existence. So let's go back to Our Lady's Existence. This is the first home that you open up, and it's in Glenside?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And Tell us a little bit about that ministry, and then the second home that you opened as well.
Well, Our Lady's House, we can house three moms. We have a house mother. We work with the moms. We have a counselor that comes in and works with the moms with parenting, budgeting, similar to what Rita was saying, Bible study. We do another night. And also, it's non-denominational. And, you know, we just want the women to, we're trying to help them to see the dignity in their own life and so that they can move forward in their life and have respect for themselves and move on. They can stay with us for up to 18 months, provided they are either working or in school, and we help them along the road with that. Sometimes, we hope, I always say we don't want them there forever. We're like the bridge to get them from where they are to till they can become independent, you know, get on their own. Sometimes they take advantage of that in a good way, and other times they don't, and I have to ask them to leave. That happens too. It's not easy, but you know, I've had girls, young women who I've had to put out, and later on said to me, I'll never forget Tahira, and she had two little ones, and she just was not doing what she was supposed to be, her goals she was supposed to be working on, and finally I had to say, Tahira, you have to move. She moved back with her sister, but she said to me later, Miss Wendy, that was the best thing you did by kicking mm-hmm. me out, because you made me get myself moving, because I was just kind of laying back and was not moving forward. I was just taking it easy, like, this is too comfortable here. And I said, no, you have to, you know, we want you to, you have potential. We want you to use the gifts mm-hmm. God's given you. And she's great. She's got two kids in college now. So, you know, this was when they were 6 months and like 2 years old. So,
and I see Rita shaking her head as well, yeah, because I know that you've been in that experience.
Yeah, Rita and I, we share many war stories, right,
yeah.
Rita? We do.
I actually work for the Stantons also.
Yeah.
At Guiding Star.
At Guiding Star.
So,
she was there.
Yeah. That's where you met.
Yeah.
It's interesting the path that, you know, Providence brings us, and mm-hmm. then we meet each other again.
Yeah. Guiding Star is the other home that you mentioned, and that was, that came to be, there was a nun that was, that's Sister Marianne that was got Guiding Star going, and she was moving to Reading to start another home, and they thought, oh my gosh, you know, we're not going to be able to keep this going. And we said, no, we need this so desperately. And they can take six and seven if it's like an emergency. And so my husband went on board, and he's been running that home since. So,
and
you know,
that's in Glenside as well?
No, that
County?
Is in, like, oh. I guess you would
West
say
Oakland.
West Oakland area.
West
yeah, West
okay.
Oakland.
So on the cusp of the city.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So so we work together a lot with the two homes, obviously, you know.
And I think it's interesting that this is not a city issue. You know, Glenside, is all over.
That's
that
right.
We need to help our women in
families. Bucks County, Montgomery County, Chester County, Delaware County, I mean, Philly, it's all over. And we get calls for women from all over.
Do you have a waiting list?
Yes. And we.
How long is the waiting list?
Well, I mean, I have a book, and I just write, you know, put their name, and then sometimes when an opening comes up, I go back, and sometimes it could be 6 months, and by then they've found something else.
Are you the one that's managing both of these houses?
No, just I manage Our Lady's House.
Okay.
And we have Tina Clark manages Guiding Star.
Okay. And tell us a little bit about your work at Abington Hospital.
Well, we've been praying at Abington Hospital for years now. The first Sunday of the month, were there from 2 to 3 praying outside, just praying that they would have a change of heart and that their board would come to see that, you know, they do so many wonderful things at that hospital. They have a NICU unit there that is saving children. And, you know, a couple units down, they have a unit that where they're doing abortions. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it doesn't make sense.
That you're bringing life and you understand that there's a heart beating at 10 weeks old and that there's little spinal cord, all the bones are there at 12, 13 weeks and they can feel pain at 20 weeks. But we're choosing to snuff out that life just down the hall. I don't understand the mentality.
Yeah, there are many good people that work there and doctors that work there, but yet they have this other side that where they're taking the lives of these children. And unfortunately, you know, many times children who have disabilities or Down syndrome, as I'm sure you've read statistics on how many, you know, unfortunately Down's children are being killed in the womb because they think they're not perfect.
And
because
girls,
all of us are so perfect.
Exactly.
You know?
No, not me. Oh, my goodness.
So it's so sad.
I want to share, how many stories do we all know? I have girlfriends personally, neighbors, people at church, people who are atheists that say, they told me that my baby was going to be Down syndrome. They told me that my baby was going to have gross deformities. They told me that I should have an abortion. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at a child.
That's perfect.
That is perfect.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, we all know.
But
yeah.
Even if that child did have Down syndrome, it's still perfect.
That's
because
right.
God creates us all perfectly.
That's right.
He doesn't make any mistakes.
Right.
But, so, when I think of how many babies were absolutely aborted because they had false positives on tests in the womb, it's very disheartening.
Yeah.
It's very sad. And, you know, I wouldn't even want to share that news with a mom because I think that would be a burden too great for them to bear, knowing that they've already taken their life of their child, but it was a child that, you know, could have been a doctor, could have
That's
been
right.
a researcher that was finding the cure for AIDS, a Picasso, right. president of the United States.
Beethoven, you know.
Teacher.
Yeah.
A Wayne
That's
Hall
right.
director.
That's right.
Yes,
That's
absolutely.
Right. That's right.
So,
oh, by the grace of God.
How have you seen your work at Abington Hospital the first Sunday of the month, 1 to 3?
No, 2 to 3.
2 to 3.
2 to 3. It's only 1 hour. From 2 to 3.
And they can just show up. We can
just show up.
Where do we just show up?
At the corner of Horace Avenue on York Road. It's right at the corner. You'll see us there. And we have just signs that say abortion kills children. And just prayerful, peaceful.
Truthful, peaceful.
And, yeah. Yeah, that's it.
And
even when we're outside of Abington or when we're outside of any abortion mill, it's just, you know, we're there praying for the people inside that are doing the abortions. We're praying for the women, especially when we see women, when you see women going in that are in tears, it's so heart-wrenching. And you're saying, we're here to help you. We want to help you. We're, you know, that's why we're here. We care about women. We care about you.
And we know there's that prayer does work.
Yes.
Because
yeah.
Abby Johnson used to be the director of Planned Parenthood, and she had a change of heart.
Yes.
And that's supernatural. That's because of the prayers that were being lifted up every day.
That's right.
So we are able to change these statistics today, and we do have hope, and we will have victory with this. And I believe that the tide is turning personally. So let's also talk about, have you ever had issues when you're picketing outside of Abington Hospital or any? Rita, I know that you picket too. Let's talk about this.
Yeah.
I know that you girls picket outside of abortion clinics. Do you get spit on? Do you get hauled off to jail? What is our treatment like? We are peacefully praying. We are trying to help these women. It is our right. It is our freedom of speech. Mm-hmm. It is our religious right to share the truth with these girls. Share a little bit about your experience.
You know, I came on board with Wendy and Pat, and I go down to 8th and Arch, which there's a center there. And so we're down there praying and also just approaching the women that are going in.
And that's on Saturday mornings.
Yeah.
That's every Saturday morning.
Every Saturday morning. Yep.
8th and Arch every Saturday.
Yeah. What's that morning? From like 7 to like 10 a.m.
7 to 10. Okay.
Yeah. So we're down there just And to me, honestly, it's a privilege. It's an honor, you know, to be the last voice of rescue that they hear. And a lot of times people don't like being in that situation because it can be very confrontational. They have escorts down there that are, they want to make sure that these women get in there and abort their babies. And it is so, to me, it's so crazy because it's like, if I, and I've actually said this to the escorts before, and they had the police down there, and I've said it to the police. I said, if I punch a pregnant woman in the stomach and she loses her baby, then I will go to jail for doing that because that is considered taking the life of her baby. I've housed girls in Wayne Hall that fought a pregnant girl and she had a miscarriage and then he had to go to court, you know. But yet and still, here are the police, the same police that will lock me up if I punch a pregnant woman in the stomach and cause her a miscarriage, are the same police that are protecting these women to go in and have an abortion. So to me, it's just, it's oxymoronic. Like, it's crazy, you
it
know.
Is. I think it's an oxymoron that on the back of our cigarette packages, it says may be harmful to women. But on our abortion clinics, it doesn't say may be harmful to women and children and men.
Yes.
It seems like our perspective is in the wrong place when we're trying to think about health and healthy living.
Right.
For our young women and our young men and our babies.
Yeah, it's a very difficult place to be, but I'm honored to be there. I love being there. If I can make a difference, you know, to help somebody to turn around, then that's what I'm there for. So.
And I want to add also that one of our moms that was at Our Lady's House, beautiful young girl, Cheryl, beautiful, she's been coming down to witness. She has two little babies. And she's been coming down. My husband, for a while there, she was going every week. And he'd pick her up, and she'll go down. And one week she said, "Oh, Mr. Patrick, I can't go today." He said, "That's all right. That's all right." An hour later, she took the bus down. She showed up. She said, "I had to come." And she's a beautiful witness, a beautiful smile, and gentle witness to, like, look, you can, there's help. There's help for you. You don't have to do this.
Did,
you know,
when you chose abortion, Rita, did they talk to you before you did that? Did they say, hey, here's some information on adoption. You might want to have this baby.
No, not at all. As a matter of fact, it was never, I knew that it was a baby. I mean, okay, you're pregnant. You know you're pregnant with a child. It's what you're pregnant with. So I knew I was pregnant with a baby, but the doctor never ever said that to me. Now, I did not have my abortion at Planned Parenthood, have my abortion at a hospital. But and I was, my GYN is the one that performed the abortion, but he never said anything about this as a baby. I went in.
They
and,
dehumanize it. They say it or fetus or.
They never said baby.
They don't want you to get connected to that child.
No, not at all. I knew, but they never said anything. No.
Okay, so how can we get in touch with you girls and help you with your? How can we get in touch with Wayne Hall and help you, or how can we show up with you and picket with you, Rita? And then I'm going to ask you the same questions. How can we help you at Guiding Star and Our Lady's Existence? Are there websites, Facebook pages?
Yeah. Well, you can go to our website at www.sundaybreakfast.org, and if you click on programs, you'll just see Wayne Hall and click on that. You can contact us via email. You can call our office at 215-844-7116, and you can join us, me and Wendy and Pat. We're down at the clinic at 8th and Arch. Her husband does some things some other places as well.
8th and Arch,
12th and Locust, you said?
Yeah, 12th and Locust. And actually, there's each Saturday of the month, there's different abortion centers that are where people are there praying.
Is there a website that we can
and
go to?
It used to be called Helpers of God's Precious Infants. And I'm not sure if that's still, if there's a website for that. But the first Sunday of the month, Saturday, they're at Comley Road, the Northeast Women's Center on Comley Road. It's at Comley and the Boulevard in Northeast Philadelphia. And they really could use people there praying. Dave and Betty Mayer have been there for years, faithfully there witnessing and praying and counseling, trying to help women. And Harold, there's Tom Lacey. There's guys that are there every week. That's the, and they're there every Saturday. But that's the first Saturday. The second Saturday, I forget where they go. The third Saturday is 12th and Locust. The fourth is 8th and Arch. But there's every week there's different abortion centers where people are praying and they're trying to counsel women and help them and reach out to them. And God bless the women's center right near 12th and Locust that opened up, the Legacy of Life. That's another wonderful, they have been awesome helping so many of the women that have not gone in to have their abortion, and they've been taking them right there, and the women have been there to say, here, we're here to help you. Mm-hmm. We do care about you and your child, and but that's why we're here.
I think that's what's so beautiful about celebrating life is that we're not just telling you to have your child and then not helping you.
No.
We want to walk alongside you when the child comes and stay with you. So we need to wrap it up, and during this month of Thanksgiving, I want to say that I'm so thankful for you two women, for everything that you're doing and just celebrating life, and I'd like to ask you, for what are you oh so thankful for this month at Thanksgiving? Rita?
Yeah, well, me, I'm thankful for 2 Corinthians 5:17, that whoever's in Christ is a new creation, and the old is gone and the new has come, and that is just... I'm so thankful. Every day I look in the mirror, I see a miracle, and it's me. I'm changed, and that is just so, I can't believe what God has done in my heart and how He's changed me. He is a miracle worker, and I am just thankful for that.
That's awesome. And how about you, Wendy?
I am very thankful for the blessing of my husband and my family, our children, our grandchildren, our extended family. I'm just really blessed. My parents, my in-laws, and I've been blessed so much in my life. Just thankful that I never would have known I'd be where I am today. Mm-hmm. And, that we'd be running two homes, and God puts things in your path, and you're like, really? You want me to do this? But it's amazing what He does. And, when you say yes, it's all by the grace of God.
And it's exciting.
Yes.
And you're walking step by step in faith. And I think that grows all of our faith more. Personally, but also by hearing your girls' stories, it just is really allowing me to grow as a person and as a Christian. So thank you again for being with us. This is Your Family Matters with Carla Dedesi, 1180 WFYL, where we believe that we can create strong families who are going to create strong communities and a strong nation. Yeah.